Good morning and welcome to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. It's a weekly program about health, fitness, nutrition, and all things lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I am David Cushing, Dave Cushing. This morning we speak first with Tom Noaker, who is board president of the South Summit Trails Foundation. He's going to tell us about this fledgling trails group and how they wrapped up the year and why you should become a member and support their efforts.
And then our second guest is Peter Zoytlin. He's a freelance journalist, best-selling author, and his work appears regularly in major national publications. He's written now a second book about dogs, rescue dogs specifically. This book is called Rescued, What Second Chance Dogs Teach Us About Living with Purpose, Loving with Abandon, and Finding Joy in Little Things.
That sounds great. And finally, we'll explore medical cannabis as a viable alternative to opioids for pain relief. And we'll be joined by Dr. Andy Talbot, a local chronic pain physician, along with Christine Stenquist, who is the founder of Together for Responsible Use in Cannabis Education, which has a great acronym, TRUCE.
This is The Mountain Life. Stay with us. We'll be back after these words.
Hi, Dan Dearden here, owner of Just Right Air and new sponsor of KPCW programming. Just Right Air has been advising Park City area homeowners to repair, replace, and maintain their heating and air conditioning since 2004. Details at justrightair.com.
Matt here from San Francisco Design, supporting our local radio station, KPCW. Since 1990, San Francisco Design offers interior design and a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings with store locations in Salt Lake City and Park City on Bonanza Drive. On the web at sanfrandesign.com, San Francisco Design. Love your home.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with my co-host, Dave Cushing.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Dave. Nice to have you back.
Good to see you again.
Yes. Well, the South Summit Trails Foundation has a mission. It's to connect communities and increase recreation opportunities for present and future generations. Sounds like a great mission. We're joined on the phone by board president and one of the founders of the group, Tom Noaker, for an end-of-season recap and also to hear about why you should register for their 5K coming up this weekend. Welcome, Tom. Good morning.
Good morning, Lynn. Morning, Dave.
Hi, Tom.
Great to have you. It's been a while since we've talked. And it seems like the South Summit Trails Foundation is just doing all kinds of great things. You're always having trail building and special events and get-togethers. You've really created a little community out there.
Oh, well, I think the community existed, but we've just been able to sort of corral it and make some things happen. So that's been fun.
Yeah. So you're working on all these trails. If you go on your website, you can see the different trails. And, you know, you're starting very grassroots, I guess I would say, at this point. So, you know, an entity like the Mountain Trails Foundation has all the equipment and all the resources and all the funds. And what you guys are doing is just really from the ground up. Are you do you have machinery? Are you out there with picks and shovels only?
Well, we do have hand machine tools like shovels and picks and such, and we do use those. We don't have a mini skid yet, and we may not for a while. I think the comparison to Mountain Trails Foundation is a good comparison, but you have to go back to when they started, and that's about where we're at. You know, we're 2 years into this now. And a lot of what we've faced in these first 2 years is just, you know, standing up a nonprofit and getting it going. And then from there, as you well know, from working with the Mountain Trails Foundation, it all comes down to funding. You can have great ideas, but they're not going to get implemented unless you have funding. So we've been involved in that process, in grants, et cetera. Some politics. Like it or not, that surrounds us all, and that's where we've been engaged mostly. At the beginning, we have like you spoke to earlier, we have been involved with trails maintenance and volunteer days with the Forest Service, and we've done some work at High Star, just, you know, trails maintenance work. And we have some great plans in place, and we've made some headway with a couple of really important projects, we think. So, yeah, it's off to a good start.
Tom, that sounds amazing. I'm a relatively new to town. This is my second season as a mountain biker up here, and I did get out to the High Star facility at someone's recommendation, and, wow, that's quite a piece of work.
Especially
the one-way downs, right? Those are fantastic.
You know, it's honestly, it's not our project. We can't say that we own that project.
Right.
We were involved in the front end of that project and through the approval process and discussions with the owners of High Star about how to approach it. And we're very happy with their decisions to make it public,
right,
not private. Bob Radke with Sagebrush Trail Builders and Derek and his crew are responsible for they're responsible for actually building the trail, and that starts from flagging it and designing it to final. And Derek had a big thing to do with that, changing a few things as we went forward. For us, that's, 20 or so miles of trail that did not exist on this side of the county, and it's excellent.
Right, and then looking at the maps on your website this morning, there's a lot of 4 to 9 mile out and backs that look pretty amazing and fairly easy to get to. How long have those been around?
Some of those have been in place. For instance, the Oakley Trail, I'm going to think that's been around for about 15 years. But it was built by an equestrian group. It's not particularly great for mountain biking. It's great for running and hiking, obviously, for equestrian use. But that's been around for a while, and it's actually and actually turns into a loop now.
Oh.
And that loop is about 4 miles in distance round trip. There's a trail on Rocky Top, which is on Victory Ranch property. That's an out and back as well. It's been in existence for roughly 8 years, 9 years. Opportunities to build more in that area in the future. There's some other small sort of self-contained trails that we hope to somehow in the future connect. But they're on our map, and I think a lot of people were probably surprised to see this.
Yeah, exactly. So that was one of the questions I wanted to ask you. A lot of people have known, been out to the Bench Creek Trail. That's out in Woodland. If you go from the Mormon Church up to Bench Creek Road, you find it along there. It's been there forever, but it's been really, filled with lots of hike-a-bike. And I know that you've been working on that, and I also know that you're trying to connect it to another trail that would be across the Wolf Creek Pass Highway, whatever that's called, and kind of coming back down toward north towards Camas and Beaver Creek. So can you talk about that?
That's a distant future. When I say distant future, I mean it's still over the horizon. In other words, it's not shovel ready for a while yet. I think perhaps what you're referring to, a connection through the Wolf Creek Ranches into Victory Ranch. So Victory Ranch built the trail that they were required to build with their development agreement with Wasatch County that connects off the backside of Coyote. Most people know that trail. The trail they built is about an 8 mile segment. Sagebrush Trail Builders was the contractor on that, so it's well built. The difficulty there is it's hard to get to. You have to get into Coyote, come around the backside, and then drop into that trail. And then when you get to the 8 mile mark, there's a terminus there, because Victory Ranch, all the trails, and they do have trails, they're all private, and they don't want public use on their private trails, so that becomes an out and back. The long term for that is to connect that public trail through the perimeter of Victory into Wolf Creek and then into that Bench Creek Trail that you spoke of. And Bench Creek Trail, there's a boundary with Forest Service on the Wolf Creek Ranch property, and there was a timber cut in the area. And we were waiting for that timber cut to be finished, and then there's a realignment we will go through with Forest Service to connect those trails.
Yeah.
It's not a, again, that's not something that we can look to for the, that's not on our front burner in the sense that we could get, you know, get that in the ground and done in the next season.
Right.
It's more of a long-term project, but that and I've talked to Charlie Sturgis with Mountain Trails Foundation about the potential of connecting from the Wild Trail side across the highway through the tunnel into Coyote and then being able to go all the way through Victory all the way into Wolf Creek. I mean, there's a potential there to do 50 miles of single track.
That's like a multi-day trail. That would be great.
Well, that's exactly what it would be.
Yeah. Wonderful work. And, you know, that raises a question for me about development approvals for anything that's going in. You know, we know in the Park City side, and I don't know how much throughout the county it's this way, that when you're getting approval for your development, you also have to show your trails plan. And it's all part of a master trails plan. How are you on master trails out there in the South Summit Trails Foundation, and how does that all work?
Well, I go back to that first statement about politics. And you know, we do have some gated and private communities on this side of the county that occupy a fairly large footprint, and they don't have master trails plans. Victory is one that does, and that was negotiated through Wasatch County because that's a development that sits kind of on the county line, if you can think of it. They have about 1,200 acres on the north side of Highway 35, right opposite the entrance to Victory Ranch. That's in Summit County. But it's been an issue for us moving forward with these larger private communities. Maple Ridge in Oakley is a private gated community now. It started life years ago public and reverted to private. And there's no stipulation. There's no trails stipulation in their development. Tuahay also has trails, and they do have a private trail that's not extensive, but they also have a small, I would call it small, about 2.5 mile segment that is public. It's accessible. Those properties are tied up, and no development agreement regarding trails in any of those projects. Wolf Creek Ranches also has trails that are private. They are, and I referred to that earlier, they are interested in connecting to Victory and working with the Forest Service and trail realignment. So there's some movement, but in the future, as these developments pop up, and they will most certainly, that's something that we're pushing for at the county level and within the incorporated cities on this side of the county.
Hey, to change gears a little bit, how's the cell phone coverage out on some of the trails, for example, along Mirror Lake? And the reason I ask is earlier this summer, I was with an experienced mountain biker on the backside of Coyote who suffered a simple fall but a complex muscle pull, and we were able to limp down over the course of 2 hours. But if we had needed rescue services, is that available where y'all do trails?
Well, I would say it's spotty. Where you were, and I'm familiar with that area, once you get on the backside of Coyote, no, you're looking at, you're looking east towards a lot of wilderness there.
That's right, yeah.
And you can imagine that's not going to happen if you're on that side of the ridge line. And the front side of Coyote, yeah, of course, because you're facing the valley and you do have good coverage in there. In the Oakley area, about partway, I would say halfway up Weber Canyon, and it depends on your provider, right? But, I lose coverage at the top 3 miles in Weber Canyon. Typically, I'm out of coverage when I get to Soapstone on the Mirror Lake Road, which is about 15 miles east of Camas. It depends on where you are. I mean, on the Oakley Trail, same thing as Coyote. When you get on the backside, no service, front side service. So it's spotty, for sure.
It's something to consider when you go out then, if, even for experienced people. Right.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Speaking of people, are people available, or are they encouraged to join your group? Do you have a membership program?
We do, we've actually just hired our first employee part-time, but Hans Johansson's actually working on our website and membership detail on that website, as well as and we have monthly meetings that we post on our website, and everybody's invited to come and just see what we're up to. In those meetings, we basically just outline what we've done to that point year to date and what we're working on in the future. And we're always looking for ideas and always looking for people who are willing to come, not just present ideas, but also, you know, if you have time, be involved and engaged.
What's the recommended membership contribution? Or do you have a base level of membership?
We're establishing several different levels. There's a minimum, like $10 donation, for instance, and it goes up from there. And we have corporate memberships. And we've been really fortunate to have some anonymous donors who have helped us out financially in a big way. For instance, the Stevens Grove project here in Oakley, we had an anonymous donor that helped really backstop maintenance on that project for many years to come. Summit Land Conservancy was involved in that project. And we're about to put shovels in the ground there, it looks like, maybe even this month, perhaps. So, yeah, we've been lucky to have a lot of people involved right away.
That's great. You know, so many people come over to High Star and do the trails there, and boy, it sure would be great. You know, a lot of times I don't think about the South Summit Trails Foundation until I'm over there riding on those trails, and I go, oh, I should make a donation. It sure would be nice to have one of those donation boxes there. Maybe you already have one that I missed.
Well, we do have a few donation boxes at the point where we're essentially selling our maps.
Oh, I see.
They're free if you want to take one, but if you want to put a donation in, we'd love to have that donation as well. Those are available at a number of places in Camas, in Oakley at the diner, the Oakley Diner.
Oh, yeah.
Rhode Island Diner. Mm-hmm. We certainly welcome any donations, for sure.
Great. Before we let you go, Tom, we better talk about what's coming up this Saturday. You've got a 5K. It's in conjunction with the Recycle Utah Harvest Festival. So is this happening at the High Star Ranch, 5K? And is it a run? Is it a bike? It's a trail run. There we go.
Yeah, it is. It is at the High Star Ranch. And it is, those trails are mountain bike only, but they've dedicated that morning because they're having their autumn festival. It's an annual event, and we piggybacked onto that with the 5K. It's nice, you know, it's a nice pairing.
Absolutely.
Begins at 8:30. Yeah, begins at 8:30. They've actually closed the lower trails, the lower 5K, to runners that morning. It begins again at 8:30. You can sign up on southsummittrails.org. It's runner cards doing the scoring and timing and registration, or day of registration 7:45 if you can't get online or you just decide at the last minute you want to do it. It's supported by Summit County Restaurant Tax Grant and the New West Country Store here in Camas. We'd love to see as many people out. It's a fundraiser for our organization.
Yeah. Well, great. $30 entry prior to... Oh, that's over. That was October 1st. Now it's
right.
$40. And again, it starts at 8:30. Sounds like fun. You can hang around the Recycle Utah Harvest Festival afterwards. It's at High Star Ranch. You just go to the, I'm sure it will be obvious when you pull into High Star.
Oh, it will be. There'll be signs. And again, if you've ever ridden there, you know where it is. It's right through that main gate at the bottom of the trail system, and that I'm sure that'll be the start-finish area.
All right. Well, Tom Noker, the board president and one of the founders of the South Summit Trails Foundation, thanks for joining us this morning, and best of luck as you continue on with your trail endeavors.
Thanks for having me, Lynn. Dave?
So
thanks,
long.
Tom. Bye-bye. And... They're doing great things over there.
Right, and I noticed that they have an October 18th general meeting, all invited, open to the public to talk about trails and how to get involved out there. But I forgot to ask them where that's held. It's probably on the website.
Yes, yeah. And that website is southsummittrails.org. And they are. I remember way back in the day when Mountain Trails Foundation was just getting going. And, you know, we have a couple of miles of trail here and a couple of miles there. And it was great. We cherished those trails. Now we have it so good here. And it'd be great to go out and support what they're doing out there. And also a lot of equestrians and other, you know, multi-use trail users. Yeah.
Let's make it happen.
That's right.
Park City.
This is the Mountain Life. We'll be back. Now we're going to talk about rescue dogs. You know, we thought this week, it's been a bad week in news. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk about how great rescue dogs can be in our lives. And we've got a guest, Peter Zoytlin, who's written a book about it. When we return, stay with us.
Hi, I'm Whitney Wall from Park City Mountain and proud supporter of KPCW. Park City Mountain hosts winter events throughout the season, including Snowfest, the annual Torchlight Parade, New Year's Eve celebration, Spring Groove, and more. More information about all the events happening at Park City Mountain this winter can be found at parkcitymountain.com.
Matt here from San Francisco Design. Since the start of our business in 1990, we have been supporting KPCW. We offer home decor for Park City and Salt Lake and feature modern furnishings from around the world. Whether you're looking to furnish an entire home or just redecorating a single room, we can help with our in-house design team. Located on Bonanza Drive and on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
This is Dr. Phil Davidson of Davidson Orthopedics, proud KPCW sponsor of The Mountain Life. Are you reluctant or worried about having a total knee or shoulder replacement? We offer an array of non-surgical and surgical alternatives. More information on our website at davidsonorthopedics.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life. Our next guest is a best-selling author and journalist. His name is Peter Zoytlin. He explores the world of rescue dogs. We thought we needed to hear a little happy, warm, and fuzzy news today, and no better topic than this. Peter's written a new book called Rescued: What Second Chance Dogs Teach Us About Living with Purpose, Loving with Abandon, and Finding Joy in the Little Things. Here in Park City, many of us have been up close and personal with rescue dogs, and we've possibly walked through Nuzzles and Company at the urging of our children or our partners and ended up with a pet. Peter will underscore that as one of life's best moments. Oh, he'll underscore that as one of life's best moments, and he'll share a few awe-inspiring stories about rescue dogs who, he says, help us put the trials and tribulations of our daily lives into perspective, helping us live every day with greater appreciation and gratitude. Well, welcome, Peter Zoytlin.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Great. Where are you calling from today?
I live outside of Boston with three rescue dogs from the state of Louisiana.
Right. And so there is, you mentioned in your book, there is a large movement of rescue dogs from southern climates to northern climates, and it's thousands and thousands of animals every year. Can you explain that?
You know, the canine overpopulation problem in the United States is heavily concentrated in the South for a variety of complicated reasons, and we have, particularly here in the Northeast, over many generations done a really good job of spaying and neutering and getting populations under control. So there's a great need for homes, and there's a great number of dogs in the South. And so these dogs have started to find their way north through rescue organizations that are finding them forever homes up here.
Well, that's an interesting phenomenon. So also we learn in your book that you really didn't want a dog for the first 30 years of your marriage, or nearly. So what changed, and how did you decide on a rescue dog versus another dog?
Yeah, I was stubbornly resistant, but what happened was, when my youngest son was about to be a senior in high school, and I started to contemplate the idea that we had reached a point in our lives when we were going to be empty nesters. I just felt like I wasn't done nurturing, and my wife had been, you know, really pressing hard for a dog for a long time, and I finally just succumbed. I knew nothing about rescue dogs. If you would ask me then, when she suggested it, my image of a rescue dog was a St. Bernard in the Alps. I really didn't know anything about the problem or why we were even, you know, why are we getting a dog from Louisiana? And once we arrived here, our first dog, Albie, I just had so many questions. I wanted to know why there were so many dogs like Albie out there, because everybody I was meeting, you know, walking on the trails near here had a dog from Tennessee or Mississippi or Texas. And, you know, but I think it was the prospect of being an empty nester that just broke the dam, and I just didn't want to be in an empty nest. And, you know, we had some more love to give and thought we would give it to these dogs.
Well, Peter, I have to ask you, what are the complex problems in the South? I mean, are people not spaying and neutering their dogs? Is it, you know, I would imagine with our current several superstorms, hurricanes down there,
right.
We, you know, a lot, I don't think about dogs, but imagine the number that need to be rescued out of those kinds of situations. Why the proliferation?
I think it's important for people to realize that all these storms exacerbate the problem. We're really dealing with a chronic problem that was there before these storms and will be there for a long time afterwards. There's over a million strays in Houston alone. The reasons why this problem is concentrated in certain parts of the country is complicated. It is true that in parts of the South, and I don't want to generalize too much, there's not a strong spay-neuter culture. People often tend to live with their dogs differently. Dogs tend to be, in some places, yard dogs. If they belong to people, they may live in the yard. If they're not spayed and neutered, they may wander.
Uh-huh.
The natural things will happen, and before you know it, the population is spun out of control. So there are a lot of complex reasons that feed into this. You know, there's a lot of people that I met down south who have dogs, they keep as pets, they love them very much. But the idea that they would live in the house and be in the kitchen or sleeping in the bed is a very foreign concept to them. And many people in the South will get dogs, for example, to be a hunting dog or to be, you know, to provide protection. And if that dog doesn't really rise to the occasion for which it was obtained, it's kind of disposable, unfortunately. Now, again, there are many great people down south working to save these dogs. I don't want to paint everybody with the same brush. The reasons are complicated, but the reality is that the overpopulation problem does tend to be concentrated down south.
Okay, that's making more sense now. Well, you've written this book, Rescued, What Second Chance Dogs Teach Us About Living with Purpose, Loving with Abandon, and Finding Joy in the Little Things. We thought it was a fitting topic for this week, as lots of bad news is what we've been kind of focused on. And there is that warm and fuzzy aspect to rescue dogs, but there's another aspect as well, and those are the sheer numbers about how many dogs are euthanized in this country and how many dogs are rescued and adopted. Can you give us those?
Well, you know, I don't, states vary in terms of how well they keep this data. But, you know, in the shelter where Albie managed to survive for several months in Louisiana, almost 90% of the dogs that come into that shelter, and it's in a very rural place, over 90% of them are euthanized. And they probably bring in around 4,000 dogs a year, you know, in one small county in Louisiana. And as I mentioned, there's over a million strays in Houston. The reason, in some cases, why these euthanasia rates are so high is that the more dogs are arriving every day at the doorstep of these shelters, and there's no room for them. You know, some communities have committed to becoming no-kill communities, which is great.
Yeah.
I talked to one rescuer. He says, first we have to get to no suffering, and then we can move to no kill. You know, you've got an intractable problem. A lot of as people will say, human irresponsibility that contributes to it. I don't know exactly how many dogs were euthanized every year in this country. I don't think anybody knows for sure. But many of them don't even make it to shelters. They'll never even see the inside of a shelter. They will just exist on the street and live their lives in misery there.
All right, so now let's switch over to the benefits of bringing in these dogs. You have a lot of stories from your own life and other things that you've chronicled in your book. Can you give us a few fantastic examples of the power of a rescue dog?
I think these dogs help you to be the best person you can be. You know, I think they bring out our more compassionate selves. I think they get us out of our own heads, you know, because we have to attend to their needs. I think they return the love that you give them so many times over. You know, they see you as sort of infallible. I often say that when I come home, the dogs treat me like I've just liberated Europe, and it's great to feel like a hero. But I think they encourage us to aspire to be the people that, you know, they think we are. And I would just say the most important benefit is that they draw your most compassionate self forward, and they give you perspective on your own life.
In your book, you also mention a critical moment in your relationship with Albie when he had been a downstairs dog, and suddenly he went where?
Well, he slept under the coffee table in the living room for about 5 weeks. We couldn't even coax him upstairs until one night I came up and found him in our bed, and I had vowed that when I told my wife I agreed to get a dog, and I said, he's never going to sleep in the bed. And I took one look at that dog and his eyes, and I knew he was there to stay. And I think that was the moment he was telling us that I'm home. You know, I finally feel like this is my place, you are my people, and I'm at home.
We want to thank you so much for sharing this with us. Oh, sorry. Thanks, Peter. We're going to move along and encourage people to check out this book, which went on sale just yesterday. It's called Rescued, What Second Chance Dogs Teach Us About Living with Purpose, Loving with Abandon, and Finding Joy in the Little Things. Thank you, Peter Zeutlin, for joining us here on
Thank
the Mountain
so much
Life.
For having me.
Oh, rescue dogs. I have two of them. Yeah, but
I've met them.
I think, yes, you have.
They're large.
And I don't think of them as rescue dogs. I think of them as, you know, purebred something
right.
or others. But, you know, you forget when you, I mean, I don't know if they qualify as rescue dogs because I rescued them when they were puppies. So
right.
they didn't have all the trauma and missing limbs. And you see some of these rescue dogs around and you just, it's unbelievable.
And let's not disrespect regular dogs who haven't been rescued. I'm sure they have amazing benefits to dog owners as well. I haven't had one for 30 years, but maybe, well, now I'm in a no pet zone where I live. So I need to rely on my friends like you.
Yes, yes. You can take care of my dogs anytime. Okay. We will be back after these words. You're listening to The Mountain Life. Stay with us. We're going to be back for a really interesting conversation about the use of medical cannabis and where that topic is as it relates to education, legislation, and etc. All of that when we return. Stay with us.
This is Nanette Bush with Fairway Independent Mortgage, supporter and longtime listener of KPCW. Fairway Independent Mortgage offers personal home, vacation home, and investment property lending. Our mortgage team partners with local realtors to provide our clients with resources to understand the home finance process, located at 1700 Park Avenue or at nanettebush.com.
For adventurers on a budget, the Utah Olympic Park offers a host of activities at no charge. Admission and parking are always free. Start with a tour of the Alf Engen Ski Museum and the Eccles 2002 Winter Games Museum. Best of all, come support athletes from all over the world who train at the park. Open daily from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Details available at UtahOlympicLegacy.org.
Utah Olympic Park is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing winter sport and recreation opportunities and a KPCW supporter.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Dave Cushing. Now we turn in the program to medical cannabis. Most of us know that here in the state of Utah, there was widespread urging at the state legislature level to allow medical marijuana use. That was a couple years ago. We're going to explore where that movement is now with our two guests here in the studio with us, Christine Stenquist. She is the founder of TRUCE, which stands for Together for Responsible Use and Cannabis Education, along with local chronic pain physician Dr. Andy Talbot. Christine is a brain tumor survivor, a mother of four, and a turned cannabis advocate. Her story is compelling. She leads a group of patients, caregivers, and supporters from all different political and religious affiliations advocating for this common cause. They both want to educate the public, so we're happy that they could both join us. Good morning to you, Andy and Christine.
Good morning.
Morning, thank you.
So, Andy, Dr. Talbot, we should start with you. I don't remember when it was that I interviewed you last, but I remember that it was following some visit I had had to the doctor where I was prescribed opioids, and I was very incensed about it. And I, you know, with all of the issues surrounding opioids in our culture today, all of the abuse and the that I thought, why can't we find another way? And I remember you saying, as a chronic pain physician, it is our job to manage pain. And I'm so curious now about your role in wanting to educate about medical cannabis. Can you talk a little bit about that evolution?
Yes, thank you for the opportunity. I think that as a chronic pain physician, we're always searching for safer ways. And in our discussion, I think it was actually a couple of years ago when you reached out about the opioid epidemic, particularly here in Utah. And Tim asked a question about cannabis, and that helped spur me to do some more research and learn about it. And I found that it's a fantastic and much, much safer alternative to opioid medications. And while we're just scratching the surface of research on it, I think that it's safe enough for us to say it's time for patients to have access to this medicine.
Right. Well, Christine, I believe now it was a couple of years ago in the state legislative session where it got actually pretty close. There was a legislator that was very supportive of medical marijuana use. And actually, we should just kind of qualify some terms here. You say medical cannabis. People call it medical marijuana. Can you clear that up for me?
Why you call it? Cannabis is the scientific term for the plant, the herb. And so trying to correct wrong messaging that has been coined the term marijuana back in the 30s, we're trying to get back to the scientific terminology of the plant so that we address this in the appropriate manner.
Okay. So where are we with our state lawmakers now, or where is the movement about allowing medical cannabis use?
I'll start for where you kind of started. In 2015, Senator Mark Madsen did present a bill that didn't quite pass that year, but we brought it back in 2016. And in 2016, it passed out of the Senate and made it to the Health and Human Services Committee, and that's where it died in the House. So we didn't get it to the House floor. Taking that bill, we decided to try and run a ballot initiative this year. And so there is a campaign that's being pushed in the state. Utah Patients Coalition is running Mark Madsen's bill to get it to the ballot, and we're bringing it to the people. Last year, there was a research bill that was presented by Representative Daw and Senator Vickers that just was hoping for more research and really limited to just a CBD research.
And CBD is?
Cannabidiol. It's one of the cannabinoids in the plant.
All right. At the Park City Film Series presentation a couple of weeks ago, someone was taking signatures for this initiative, so it's reaching up here. Yeah. And are people canvassing the whole state for this, or is it an online initiative, or how are you getting the word out?
Online initiatives are not permitted in Utah, so this is a face-to-face, in-person signing of the petition, and we are throughout the whole state. From my understanding and talking to the campaign, we've had over 1,400 volunteers register and ask to do the petition on top of a signature gathering company that the campaign has hired. So this is going to happen. We have a lot of patients who need this and a lot of people who are supporting it.
And what's the name of the campaign?
Patients Coalition. You can find them on Facebook, and they also have a website, utahpatients.org.
That's on a 501c3?
Utah Patients Coalition is a PIC. It's a political issue committee.
Oh, wow.
So it's not a nonprofit. Okay. Truce, however, is a nonprofit, and we focus solely on educating the community about cannabis and how we're going to engage with this substance when it becomes legal in our state.
Dr. Talbot, I have an idea that this opioid epidemic, there we go, and how it has affected this community specifically, will lead those of us who may be naysayers about the use of medical cannabis to say, hey, there must be a better way than prescribing opioids.
I certainly agree with that that sentiment. I want to stress that cannabis is never going to be a first-line treatment for any condition. It's never going to be the first line, and it needs to be considered as an alternative. But mm-hmm. It's a very important one because of its safety profile. I have patients come into my clinic all the time who are either using cannabis or are using cannabis and opioids, and I'm able to see them actually decrease their doses of the opioid pain medications. Now, unfortunately, because it's illegal, I have to counsel them to discontinue the use, and it's incredibly frustrating because I see people turning to the street and turning to other sources to get access to this plant that I think are not reliable and probably not safe. And so to allow them to have access to something through a controlled means with strict testing and strict guidelines, I think, is going to be a fantastic benefit to my patients especially. And there are many other conditions that would be benefited by this, but I can only speak to my expertise in chronic pain.
Can you outline the differences in addictive qualities between opioids and cannabis?
Well, certainly opioids are very, very different than cannabis in terms of causing a physical state of dependence in which if the patient or user stops using that substance, they can go through a physical state of symptoms where they experience withdrawal type symptoms. Cannabis is not physically addictive. There can be some elements of psychological and psychosocial types of addictive behaviors, but it won't cause a specific withdrawal state. But it's not just the addiction. It's that opioids can cause respiratory depression and respiratory arrest, which means stop breathing. Yeah. And cannabis has absolutely none of that quality whatsoever.
Well, how many states have medical cannabis at this point?
We have 44 states that have some form of cannabis legislation. We have 29 states that have whole plant access, what we're advocating for. So we have over half the states in the country that are moving on this.
Right. And it's fully recreationally legal in, what, a dozen now maybe?
A little under. Nine states. Nine states have recreational.
And including our neighbors on either side.
And people are quick to point that out, but I do want to point out something about those two neighboring states. In Nevada and in Colorado, those states both became legal for medical about 16 and 14 years before they ever moved towards a recreational use. Mm. As far as Utah's concerned, I don't see us moving to an adult use state. Our political climate just doesn't yield to that kind of environment for Utah. So we are advocating for and sticking to a medical program.
Right. What's the polling of Utahns about their uptake or their eagerness
for medical?
Yes.
I love being able to tell this number. For medical use and for this ballot initiative, the Dan Jones poll this summer polled us at 78% in support. That is an unbelievably high number. And when I started doing this issue in 2015 with Senator Madsen, we were polling at 51%. There's not
a
single political candidate that has those kinds of numbers.
Right.
Well, exactly. And if our elected officials are representing their constituents, then they would have to vote in favor of this, right?
Logic would dictate that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Logic. Oh,
sorry.
Logic. Sometimes the missing piece. Aha.
It can be at times.
So I think those who argue against the use of medical cannabis, I'm going to start saying it that way all
Thank
the time
you.
Now, would argue that, oh, you can sort of, you can get, you know, license to be able to purchase if you just have, say you have a headache or something like that. Like, it's far too easy. It almost becomes recreational access.
In some states, you do see that. They are far more relaxed in their qualifications. However, for Utah, we are not showing that. We are have a very defined list of conditions that patients can have access to. So they do have to go through a doctor, and it can't be just because you have a hangnail or tennis elbow. Is that a thing still?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And runner's knee and biker's chin. Once you take it on the chin like I did a couple of weeks ago. Hey, so what's your background in this
In truce?
Yeah,
in part of
truce,
the movement.
Right,
I myself am a brain tumor patient. In 1996, I was diagnosed with an acoustic neuroma, which is a benign brain tumor. I had surgery to remove the tumor. They got 40% of the tumor and hit a blood vessel, and I started to hemorrhage. I slipped into a coma. A few days later, I woke, but I had stroked, and so I had left side paralysis, numbing. I had to learn how to walk again and speak again, and that continued 16 years of, and if I'm allowed to say, hell, of being trapped in pain. I'm also diagnosed with trigeminal and occipital neuralgia, which is a severely debilitating pain condition that Andy won't even touch.
All right.
So 5 years ago, I hit a pain wall, and I wasn't able to eat and walk, and I wasn't able to take my medicine, and I started to waste. My husband took me to my physician one more time, and I begged him to tell me a little more about cannabis. I wanted to try it, and I was at a point that I was desperate. He said it was illegal in Utah. He sent me to a pain clinic that started me on Marinol, which is a synthetic THC. THC is a cannabinoid in cannabis, but this is synthesized, and it's an FDA-approved drug. I started that medication, and after 2 weeks of the therapy, I had to discontinue because it also had staggering side effects that I just couldn't function on. That led me to research online, and during that research, I found that whole plant cannabis was favored by patients. I reached out to my father, who is a narcotics officer, and said, hey, Daddy, what do you think about cannabis? And I told him the research that I found, sent him some materials and articles, and he was very supportive in me trying. And so I procured my first bag of cannabis and used it, and within seconds I got relief from my nausea. And that was the goal, was just to get to relief from the symptoms so I can start taking my pharmaceuticals again and get back to the road of recovery. What I didn't expect to happen was that I was getting relief from pain. So the continued use, after 2 weeks, I was starting to walk again in my house using my cane. After 6 months, I was driving again. And 8 months after that, I found Senator Madsen and shared my story and said, I want to help make this legal for patients like myself who have hit a wall, and we need something more than the pharmaceuticals I was wasting away on.
Oh, man, for sure. Well, it's interesting in other states how various groups have teamed up with each other and become strange bedfellows in this initiative. For example, I moved here from New Jersey, and the ACLU teamed up with the Association of Municipal Prosecutors for a statewide legalization effort because the prosecutors are sick of, you know, spending so much police time and court time on, you know, marijuana and cannabis offense. And I know that's not what we're talking about. You're talking about medical. But are there strange bedfellows in the medical world as well?
I don't know if there's strange bedfellows. I'm sorry, Andy. I'm just taking over here.
No, it's okay. it's not something that's usually really widely discussed. I think there's lots of physicians who are strong proponents of this. And just in my grassroots kind of walking around to my colleagues, I found lots of people who are supportive. I think that there's been a reticence of many physicians to kind of come out of the closet, so to speak, in support of something that is currently not legal.
Yeah, why did you come out of the closet in support?
Well, it started a few years ago when I was helping take care of my mom, who had a hip replacement and had horrible pain afterwards. The hip had to be taken out because it got infected, and she was placed on opioid medications and got really very, very ill from the opioids. They made it so she had so much nausea she could not eat and was not strong, couldn't do her physical therapy. And so she actually used a form of a cannabinoid, which is Marinol, the same medication that Christine was talking about. And she had a fantastic response, and that was really part of why I started to research this a little bit more. I'd been hearing it from patients, but had dismissed it frequently just because of the illegal nature of the drug. But I found that it's really a tremendously therapeutic agent.
What have you found in your research about the most effective means of ingesting, smoking, eating? I know there are a lot of topical ointments that people swear by.
You know, it really depends on the condition, mm-hmm. I suppose, Lynn. But I think that one thing I could say with reliability is that smoking is probably a bad delivery mechanism. I mean, physicians or medical providers are going to really endorse burning anything and inhaling it. There's particulate and non-particulate chemicals. You also destroy some of the benefits of the plant. For people that have quick attacks of pain, like Christine sometimes has, vaporizing could be an excellent, reliable, and very quick delivery method. Mm-hmm. For some people, placing oils under the tongues or using salves topically. Mm-hmm. But I think the distress is part of this ballot initiative in the act is that smoking would be discouraged, if not, frankly, just prohibited. Yeah, exactly.
So in the last year, how many of your colleagues have expressed open support? Are we at a tipping point?
We're still closeted support, I think.
Yeah, the UMA takes the Utah Medical Association takes a strong stance against it, but I have a sneaking suspicion that most of their members actually would support it because I just have spoken to many, many other physicians about it, and they're strongly in support. Mm-hmm.
Did I hear that one of our United States senators recently got involved with this?
Yes, I sat down with Senator Hatch, actually, a couple Fridays ago. Senator Hatch actually does have a bill on the Hill that federally that is looking at research. We also have Senator Lee has also got a bill, too, CARES Act. It also has research, but it does a little bit more than Hatch's bill does. It allows veteran access. It makes CBD legal in all 50 states. It opens it up to research, and it supports federalism, state rights. Mm-hmm. So it would help support our ballot initiative. So we have two sitting senators in our state that have legislation on the Hill, which
Amazing.
Is fantastic.
It really is. Wow. Mm-hmm. And as you can see, it is a sign that there are strange bedfellows here.
Yes, this does cross party lines. Yeah. And I think I must emphasize to people the reason that being because cancer doesn't care what party you're affiliated with or what religion you practice. Suffering comes to us all.
Christine Stenquist is the founder of Truce. That's Together for Responsible Use and Cannabis Education. She's joined by local chronic pain physician Dr. Andy Talbot. You have to come back when we're in the legislative session or maybe just before. Mm-hmm. That would be a good time to talk about this further. Will you join us again?
Absolutely.
Yes, thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today.
Seth Adams here from River Horse on Main, a proud supporter of KPCW. River Horse has fed appetites since 1987. Now you can have River Horse cuisine anytime with our catering division or at River Horse Provisions. RiverHorseParkCity.com, RiverHorseProvisions.com, 649-3536.
Thanks to our underwriters, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, Phil Davidson Orthopedics, Park City Mountain, Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Zions Bank, Fairway Independent Mortgage, and Valley Behavioral Health. That was a mouthful. And wonderful guests today. That's a very interesting topic. We'll make sure we cover it.
All three of them were fantastic. Yeah. Lynn, I'll see you soon.
All right. You're listening to KPCW Park City. Time for news.